From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell, getting this hour of old-time radio underway with an episode of The Mysterious Traveler, with Maurice Tarplin as the voice of The Mysterious Traveler. This broadcast, program 253 in the series, first airing on May 2nd, 1950 on Mutual. It's titled S.O.S.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler, written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan, and starring tonight three of radio's foremost personalities, Ralph Bell, Louis Van Roten, and Roger DeCoven in S.O.S.
This is a mysterious traveler inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as we join three enterprising men who are in a very dire predicament. It's a story I call S.O.S. My story tonight is about a group of unsavory individuals at the moment discussing a little unhappily their recent past.
Yes, sir. Here we are, the three of us, adrift out here. How long is it now? How long, Mike?
Let me alone. Ask Steve. He knows everything.
Yeah, he sure does. Couldn't miss, he said. Couldn't miss. Still opportunities. You just had to recognize them. Isn't that what you said, Steve? Huh? Isn't that what you say?
Shut up, Doc. Shut up. I've had enough of you.
Look at him. Now he's going to turn on that automatic radio sender. Isn't that right,
Steve? Shut up. Shut up.
Do you really think someone's going to hear those signals?
No, sir. We're adrift out here, but for good. You're wasting your time with that radio sender. No one's going to pick us up.
Right, Mike?
Stop bothering me. Let me alone.
Yes. I can remember that day, Steve, when you first spilled the plan to us.
Oh, you were the mastermind, all right.
Remember, Steve, huh?
Yeah, I remember all right. I wish I could forget that day. Forget everything that happened. But there's no escaping it. I can see everything that happened as clear as if it were only yesterday. Yeah. I remember the way I walked into the office. Mike and Doc were sitting there, waiting. Waiting for the bad news.
Well?
Farson got a life sentence. The rest got 10 to 20 years.
Great. Just great.
I just can't get over it. Just can't. Things were running so smoothly. The syndicate was cleaning up, and then this happens.
The three of us were pretty lucky. Not being indicted with the others?
Yeah. We hadn't been in South America. And on that end, we'd have gotten it in the neck, too.
I still do not understand. How could they smash the syndicate overnight? There were no records. Farson took every precaution.
Let's face it. The day for guys like us is over. The cops have science on their side. They're using every trick in the book.
Yeah, you're right.
Television, radar, infrared cameras, electro detectors, light beam alarms, and 101 other scientific gimmicks.
Yes, you are right. They have learned to move so fast that they have taken all the profit out of the rackets.
They sure have. I just wish I had a small part of all that dough I once made. Where did it go? Lawyers, bail, protection. I haven't got a cent left.
Neither have I. What about you, Steve?
I've still got a few grand left.
Well, the way science is turning the heat on, it looks like we'll have to turn honest, whether we want to or not.
Look, I've been working on an angle. What about sticking around for a couple of more days?
Get wise, Steve. The cops are ready for everything these days. There aren't any more angles.
I tell you, I've got one. I just need a little more time to work it out. What do you say?
Well, it cannot do any harm to listen.
How much time do you need?
2 days. Meet me here the day after tomorrow. And I'll lay out the whole plan for you.
Well, Steve, you still got an angle? Or did it blow up in your face?
For the past 48 hours, I've been going over it, detail by detail. And it still looks good.
Well, what is the job? Let's have it.
The lifting of $5 million worth of uncut Martino diamonds from the SS Europe.
What? You must be out of your head. It would require an army to take over that boat. It has a crew of over 300.
This plan of mine can be worked with 3 men.
Us.
This I've got to hear. Just how would you go about it, mastermind?
All right. 2 weeks from tonight, the SS Europe will be docking in London with 5 million in uncut diamonds and a shipment of 3,000 pounds of uranium under pressure.
3,000 pounds of uranium under pressure?
What are you getting at?
A half hour before the Europe lands, I go to the captain's quarters. You, Mike, you go to the radio communication office. And you, Doc, you go to the special room where the uranium is stored under pressure.
Then what?
I tell the captain that I have one man in control of radio communication and another in the uranium storage room. And unless he turns over the diamond shipment to me, a bullet will be fired into the uranium compressor, blowing up the ship.
You really expect the captain to fall for that? Why, he'll call your bluff. Dare you to blow up the ship with us on it.
Of course he will. A threat like that would never work.
You're wrong. You're wrong there. Psychologically, we've got the edge of the captain. Maybe we're willing to die, too. With a crew of 300 and twice as many passengers, he just wouldn't risk it.
Perhaps you're right. After all, his first duty is to his passengers and ship. He would probably figure that we wouldn't get far with those diamonds, that the police would get us in no time at all.
Of course. That's exactly the way he'd see it.
Suppose you two force him to turn over the diamonds. How would we make our getaway?
We'd use one of the ship's emergency launchers.
Sure. Meanwhile, the captain of the SS Europe has radioed the police. And we walk right into their arms.
The captain won't radio the police.
No, and why won't he?
For 2 reasons. First, this radio room will be put out of commission. And second, 10 minutes after we leave the Europe, it's going to blow up.
Blow up? The uranium?
That's right. There won't be a piece of the ship left or anyone to identify it.
Uh-huh. 5 million in uncut diamonds, you say, huh?
At least 5 million.
This plan of yours, Steve, is just wild enough to succeed. Yes, through sheer audacity, it might be carried off.
A job like that, it's all in it.
That's right. Well, what do you say, Doc?
Finding the thought of honest labor abhorrent, I'm inclined to go along with you, Steve.
What about you, Mike?
The odds are against us, but for that kind of dough, I'll risk it.
You won't regret it, Mike. All right, now here's the setup. The day after tomorrow, the SS America is outward bound. We'll be on her when it leaves.
You mean so that we can study the same layout that we'll find on the yacht?
Yes, that's right. By the time we board the Europe for the return trip, we'll know every inch of the ship. Now, we'll have to work fast. I'll take care of getting us passports under assumed names. Doc, I want you to book passage for the 3 of us on the America. Mike, you take... 2 days later, Doc, Mike, and myself boarded the SS America using false passports. We pushed our way through the other passengers, mostly vacationists, to our cabin on D deck. While we were unpacking, the ship's whistle blew for all visitors to leave. A few minutes later, we were on our way. During the next 3 days, we covered the ship from one end to the other, taking pictures of the layout, learning the schedules of the crew. When we walked off after the 10-day trip, we knew everything there was to know about both liners.
Passengers will kindly step this way and show their passport.
Come on, let's us.
Hope we don't have any trouble with these passports.
Stop worrying, will you?
May I see your passport, please?
Here you are.
Thank you. Richard Werby, born in Boston, United States. How long do you intend to stay here, Mr. Werby?
About a week.
Have you ever been here before?
No, this is my first visit.
Our laws are quite different than those of your country. You will do well to study this booklet, which is issued by my government.
Thank you, I will.
Your passport is stamped. You may pass.
Thank you.
I trust you enjoy your stay with us. Next passenger.
My feet hurt. Why don't we go back to the hotel?
We might as well see the local sights while we're here.
So this is what all our fellow passengers came all this way to see.
This place gives me the creeps. The natives, too. Everything looks so different.
Oh, come on now. Mike, that's no way for a traveler to speak. Sure, this place is different from what you've known. But you find plenty to interest you here.
Yeah. Just as soon be back in New York, it's all the same to you.
Relax, Mike. Another week and you'll be back in New York.
Relax, he says. I don't like places that are different. I like what I'm used to. This crazy birds. What do they call them anyway?
I don't know. Do you, Steve?
They're the national bird. Called Martinos.
Martinos, yeah. Look at them. Like vultures. Thousands of them.
Oh, you'll get used to them.
And all these canals. Never seen nothing like it.
That's one of the great attractions here. People come from all over the earth to see these canals.
Yeah, well, they can have them.
Look at those ruins over there. The war's been over all these years, and yet they've never cleaned them up, rebuilt.
Yeah, our rocket fighters sure leveled the countryside.
No wonder the natives aren't any too friendly, huh?
You say that again. I'll be glad when we board to Europe, leave this place forever.
Did you check all our luggage?
Yes, I went through the motions of looking like an anxious tourist. It'll be in our cabin when we go aboard.
What cabin did we get, Steve?
Cabin 32B.
32B? That's just a few feet away from the radio communications office.
That's right.
Attention, please. Attention, please. All passengers bound for London will now board the SS Europe. Departure time is 0900. All passengers for London will please board the SS Europe.
Come on, that's us. We followed the returning vacationists aboard, had our passports checked, and were shown to our cabin. It would be 10 days before we'd go into action, but already the three of us felt that sense of excitement that comes before a big job. And this would be a big job. The biggest ever. The minutes and the hours seemed to drag on that homeward trip. We checked the craft from stem to stern. And the layout was exactly like that of the SS America. On the final night out, all the passengers were celebrating. None of them suspecting that they'd never see London. At 4 a.m., with the liner just 1 hour from London, the three of us went over our plans for the last time. The interminable roar of the motors in our ears. Okay, this is it. You both have your guns.
Yes, of course.
Now, Mike, you'll take over radio communications. There'll be just one radio operator on duty. Remember now, take them quietly.
He won't let out a peep.
Good. It shouldn't take you more than a few minutes to put the radio and radar equipment out of commission. Now, make sure you don't damage the ship's intercommunication system.
Just leave it to me.
Now, Doc, there's one crew member guarding the storage room where the uranium shipment is being kept. Once you've taken care of him, lock yourself in the storage room. Now, you don't come out until I give the signal.
I understand.
Now, have you got the demolition stick?
It's right here.
Good, good.
I understand.
Now, have you got the demolition stick?
It's right here.
Good, good. I've explained how it works. When I rap on the storage room door, you plant the demolition stick under the uranium compressor, so they won't be able to see it.
Right.
We'll have to move fast now. That explosive will go off 10 minutes after it's set.
Will we be able to get far enough away before the explosion?
Oh, yes. The launch is on B deck, right outside the storage room. We'll be in the launch and away in a matter of seconds.
Doc, you've already checked the launch, haven't you?
Yes, I just came from it. It's all set to go.
All right. That takes care of everything. Now, let's set our watches. I've got 4:26, 45 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
50 seconds. 55 seconds. 4:27.
Right, check.
Okay. Let's go. The three of us left the cabin and separated on the deserted and dimly lit deck. I walked to the nearest staircase and went up to A deck. There wasn't a soul in sight as I walked to the captain's quarters. It was exactly 4:29 a.m. I lit a cigarette, waiting. On the horizon, far ahead, I could see the lights of London. I could feel the liner losing speed. At exactly 4:30, I knocked on the captain's door.
Come in, come in. Oh, come in, Phillips. Are you ready? I thought it was Phillips, my first officer.
No, Captain. I'm merely one of your passengers.
I'm afraid you'll have to excuse me. I'm due in the control room. We'd be landing
You'll
shortly.
Have to hear me out
yes,
first,
but I've
Captain.
Just told you... God! What's the meaning of this?
Sit down, Captain.
Now, see here...
Sit down. That's better.
Then what is it?
You're carrying $5 million in uncut Martino diamonds. I want them.
You must be out of your mind.
I'm not alone in this, Captain. At the moment, this ship is at my mercy.
It's your mercy?
Yes. My men have taken over key positions on this ship.
I don't believe you. That isn't possible.
No? Well, just as a test, pick up the phone and dial the radio communications office. Go ahead.
Radio communications office.
Who is this?
It ain't one of your crew members, Captain.
Let me have the phone. Hello, Mike.
Yeah?
Everything under control?
Couldn't be better.
Good. I'll be talking to you. Maybe now you're beginning to realize that I'm not out of my head, Captain.
You must be. Do you believe you can commit piracy and get away with it?
I'll get away with it, Captain, because you see you're going to help me.
I help you?
Yes, that's right. One of my men has taken over the storage room. where the uranium is stored under pressure.
You can't do that. Why, that pressure machine calls for constant care of an engineer. If the pressure falls below a certain point, the uranium will explode.
Oh, take it easy. Take it easy. That pressure machine is being looked after by one of my men. Nothing will happen to it. That is, if you do exactly as I say. You think I'm bluffing? You think I'm bluffing about the storage room?
Storage room?
Everything under control, Doug?
Yes.
The captain's here by the phone. Tell him what your orders are.
I am to put a bullet in the pressure machine if I don't hear from you in 15 minutes.
You heard what he said. Well?
He's bluffing. If he put a bullet in the pressure machine, uranium would blow us all up. You and your men included.
That's right. But you see, Captain, my men and I have nothing to lose. And you and the rest do.
What do you mean?
The authorities in London are waiting to arrest us. Murder. So, as I said, we have nothing to lose if we're forced to blow up the ship.
Even if I turned the diamonds over to you, how would you get away?
We take the launch on B-Deck.
I see.
You've got 13 minutes left, Captain, before my man fires that bullet. And believe me, he will.
Seems I haven't any choice.
None.
The authorities will get you for this.
Let me worry about that. You've got 12 minutes left. Now you're being sensible.
First Officer Phillips speaking.
Phillips, this is Captain Andrews.
Yes, sir.
I want you to go to the purser, have him turn over to you the consignment of uncut diamonds we're carrying. Bring them to my cabin.
Sir, we'll be landing in less than...
That's an order, Phillips.
Yes, sir.
You should be here with the diamonds in a matter of minutes.
For your sake, I hope so, Captain. I hope so.
That must be Phillips now.
Have him come in.
Come in.
I have the diamonds here, sir.
Turn them over to this man.
But, sir...
As I say, the safety of the ship and our passengers are at stake.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. You don't mind if I look them over?
What's this all about, sir?
Seems that after many centuries, piracy has returned.
Piracy, sir?
Yes. All right, I've checked them. Now, Captain, if you and your first officer will escort me to B-Deck.
Very well. Come along, Phillips.
Yes, sir.
After you, gentlemen, our first stop will be the radio communications office. Here we are. Come on out on deck, Mike.
Everything all right?
Yes, stuff's in the sparks. All right, Captain, the next stop is the special storage room.
Very well.
Did you take care of the communications office, Mike?
Yeah, they won't be sending out any messages.
Good. Well, here we are, Captain. Doc? Doc?
Why don't he answer?
Now, the door's locked. Open up, Doc. It's us.
Dave, something's wrong.
Yeah.
Look, let's take the launch and blow out of here. It isn't our fault something happened to Doc.
You're forgetting one thing. We need Doc. He's the only one of us who knows how to navigate that launch.
Yeah. Come on, let's break down the door. Together now. Scummit. Once more. That does it.
Sir, shall I try to slip away and sound the alarm?
It won't be necessary, Phillips.
There's Doc, lying on the floor in there. He's out cold.
Let's get him out.
Well, the air in here... I can't breathe. This place is full of gas. Better get out of here before we pass out. That gas must have gotten dark.
Phillips.
Yes, sir?
Disarm these two men. Have the third one on our guard taken out of the storage room when the gas disperses.
Very good, sir.
I see, Phillips, you've revived the third man, eh?
Yes, sir. The three of them are all conscious again.
And the guard?
He's all right, too, sir. We found this, sir, in the third man's pocket.
Demolition stick.
As I see it, they were going to set it before they left the ship, sir.
blow up my ships and passengers, would they?
Shall I put them in the brig, sir?
Brig? No, Phyllis. I'm not taking them into London. I'm dealing with them here. Now.
Well, I don't understand, sir.
This launch they were going to take, have it filled with concentrated food and water. Enough to last them for years.
Very good, sir.
Then I want the launch's motor completely demolished. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
What are you going to do with us?
You've attempted a crime unheard of for centuries. Piracy. I'm going to mete out the old punishment for it. I'm setting the three of you adrift.
Adrift out here? No. No, you can't.
You've got to take us into London. You've got to.
They're right, sir. It's your duty to turn them over to the police. You haven't the authority to...
Mr. Phillips, judge. Out here I'm the law. You carry out my orders to the letter.
Yes, sir.
Captain, give us a break, will you? Don't set us adrift.
It will be murder. That's what it will be. Murder.
Can't set us adrift out there. You can't.
I can and I will. You earned it.
How long have we been adrift out here? 2 months? 3? I guess I lost track. A long way back. Out here, with nothing but the sky to look at. Black, empty sky, blazing with stars. Time loses all meaning. The automatic radio senders keep transmitting signals, but no one listens. No one listens.
Yes, sir, Steve. Couldn't miss, could it? He couldn't miss, huh? You had everything covered, all right. All you missed was that automatic gas alarm they had in the storage
shut
room.
Shut up, Doc, shut up.
Yes, sir. When that guard failed to check in, I got a good dose of that gas. Just a small detail you overlooked.
I said shut up.
You see, because you're sending out those signals, someone is going to pick us up, huh?
They've got to pick us up. They've got to.
You fool. We are drifting further from the Earth all the time.
But they can't leave us drifting in space in this rocket launch. They can't.
No? Why not? We are 100 million miles out and going further. And has anyone come after us yet?
The Space Patrol. They'll rescue us. I tell you, they will.
Never. They're letting us be examples to anyone else who tries to hijack a space liner. We're drifting out here in empty space for months. We'll drift onward till the day we die.
No, we won't. We'll be picked up, I tell you.
Yes. Why don't you get wise to yourself? This is the year 2185. Miracles don't happen anymore.
This is a mysterious traveler again. Did you enjoy our trip into the year 2185? It seems that criminals of the future aren't going to have any future. Not with science pitted against them. Poor Steve, Mike, and Doc. Imagine being adrift in space in a disabled rocket launch and being completely ignored. Yes, it seems that not only doesn't crime pay today, but it's going to pay even less in the year 2185.
Oh, but that reminds me of my story for next week, The Big Dive. It's about a young man who figured out a perfect alibi for murder and forgot to take into account that if...
Oh, you have to get off here. I'm sorry.
But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this same time.
You have just heard The Mysterious Traveler, which is played by Maurice Tartlin. In the cast were Ralph Bell, Louis Van Ruten, and Roger DeCoven. Original music is composed and played by Al Finelli. All characters in tonight's story were fictitious. and any resemblance to the names of actual persons was purely coincidental. Frank Waldecker speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
It's the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. Up next, a musical program, an episode of The Refreshment Club, sponsored by the Coca-Cola Company. This broadcast from December 17th, 1936.
The Refreshment Club, transcribed for radio and presented by the Coca-Cola Bottling Company. This is the Refreshment Club with Don McNeil. And don't forget, these Refreshment Club programs come to you every day at this time, Monday through Friday. You can be a member of the Refreshment Club and attend every one of these daily meetings without going out of the house. And you can enjoy ice-cold Coca-Cola in the same convenient fashion any day, anytime, right at home, by keeping a supply of bottled Coca-Cola ready in the family refrigerator. All set? Here goes the show. The Refreshment Club will come to order. And let's begin with the roll call. Clark Dennis.
Yes, indeed.
Helen Jane Velke.
I'm here.
Walter Blaufuss.
Here.
The Refreshment Club Orchestra.
Here.
Don McNeil himself.
Hello.
The meeting is yours, Don.
Now let's all go through our little daily ritual together. All right. Get the glasses. Drop in the ice. Open the bottle. Pour out the Coca-Cola. And now refresh yourself. Good old ice-cold Coca-Cola. All right, here we go. I feel a song coming on, but don't worry, it's only a song title. I know that you know something about Clark Dennis, our Refreshment Club Romeo. You know that he's taking part in a Shakespearean production up in his neighborhood these days. But perhaps you'd like to know a little more about Clark. I know from some of your letters, some of you would at least. Clark, we're going to interview you very briefly here. When were you born? Oh, come on, this is all in the up and up. When were you born?
Well, you got me. I can't think. Let's see. About 19...
How old are
I guess,
you? Let's figure
know.
It out. How old?
24
from 30. Oh, yeah. You were, huh?
I haven't figured that in a long time.
Yeah, all right. You're 24, all right. Clark, what did you do when you were a kid? What were your ambitions?
Oh, I don't know. I guess I wanted to be a doctor like my dad.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Dad's a doctor, huh?
Yeah.
And when did you start to sing, Clark?
Oh, when I was a young kid in the boys' choir.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Were you a boy soprano?
I'm afraid I was.
Now, you're down to a tenor, huh? Wait a few more years, we'll get you as a baritone, but you're doing all right as a tenor. Then you sang with various orchestras, didn't you, Clark?
Yes, I did.
What are some of them?
Well, I sang with Benny Pollock and Orville Knapp and Jay Whidden and Raymond Page.
Mm-hmm. You were out in Hollywood for a while, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
How long?
Year.
Year. How much do you weigh, Clark?
150.
150. Now, we're getting someplace. What are your... take note of that, Fossi. What are your hobbies, Clark?
Oh, swimming and golf. And hockey games.
Oh, yeah. I played golf with you one time, remember, Clark?
Yes, I did. I remember.
You're pretty fair. I'm...
Oh, you should talk.
No, I know. I'm not so good myself, but I like the way you play. You know, you're just a diamond in the rough. We call Clark the Flint Flash. Were you born in Flint, Michigan, were you?
You said it.
And what color are your eyes?
Hazel.
Oh. What color is your hair?
Dishwater blonde, I guess.
Oh, I thought you were going to say auburn there. All right, I guess you've got a pretty good picture of Clark now. He stands 5 feet...
Nine
in his stocking feet with his bedroom slippers, which he has on now, about to sing a lovely ballad in the chapel in the moonlight.
How I'd love to hear the organ in the chapel in the moonlight while we're strolling down the aisle where roses entwine. How I'd love to hear you whisper in the chapel in the moonlight that the love light in your eyes forever will shine till the roses turn to ashes, till the organ turns to rust. If you never come, I'll still be there till the moonlight turns to dark. How I'd love to hear the choir in the chapel in the moonlight as they sing, "Oh, promise me forever be mine." In the moonlight as they sing, "Oh, promise me forever be mine."
As we told you yesterday, George Kaiser, the hillbilly violinist, the Brookfield Flash, is here today with his fiddle. You know, George is sort of the hillbilly. He told his wife that he'd sure like to visit his home in the hills someday and see old Paint. She said to George that she didn't see why he couldn't forget his old girlfriend. But when it comes to mountain climbing, that one hit with a thud, didn't it? You got it, Helen Jane? Thank you. You know, when it comes to mountain climbing, George Kaiser is a regular Greta Garbo. He's certainly sure-footed. In fact, his left foot goes a little faster from walking along the sides of hills, so George has decided to dedicate his fiddle solo today to his left leg and his left foot. Wild Dog! Thank you. boy, Georgie. That was Hillbilly George Kaiser, the Brookfield Flash, really going to town with Wild Dog on his fiddle. Now, Helen Jane, what are you going to sing?
Well, I'm going to sing Don't Kiss Me Goodnight, son.
Oh, it's kind of a superstitious sounding thing, isn't it?
Well, I suppose it is. But you're not superstitious, are you, Don?
Oh, no, not in the least. You mean walking under ladders and that stuff?
Yeah.
No. Well, the only time I ever heard of anyone getting hurt, really, walking under a ladder, was the night that Bo Bremel, that's our viola player, viola, you know, Bo Bremel, he eloped with his wife, see? Mm-hmm. And she threw her suitcase out the upstairs window and it landed right on his head, see?
Well, gee, I better ruin the suitcase.
Well, it didn't do Bremel's head any good either. You should have heard him yell down there.
Well, it's a wonder he didn't wake up her father, Don.
Well, he wondered about that, too, at the time. It was an awfully dark night, and he found out later that the girl's father was holding the ladder for him. Don't kiss me. Good night.
We've been a lovely evening watching the moon aglow. Now that it's time you're leaving, just say goodbye and go. Don't kiss me goodnight, for if you kiss me goodnight and your arms hold me tight, I'm certain, my dear, we won't say goodnight. We'll just linger here till dawn. Don't say I love you, for if you say I love you, I'll say I love you too. And once you confess, how can I leave you? Then we will caress till dawn. It brings a sorrow when we say adieu. There's always tomorrow to look forward to. Don't kiss me goodnight, because your lips will invite thrilling hours of delight. I can't trust my heart, the moon is too bright. So we better part goodnight.
Well, and here's a rousing football number, Pigskin Parade, dedicated to a small college I read about. They're going to have a new concrete stadium next fall. Seems the alumni have decided to use their heads. I'd like to take Bob Denton, our recording secretary, out to lunch sometime, but he's a doggone particular about what he eats. I don't know. What about it, Bob?
Well, have you ever noticed at lunchtime that whatever you eat soon makes you thirsty? Now, with bottled Coca-Cola in your refrigerator, you'll find that its pure and wholesome refreshment has a place on every luncheon menu. It is a real taste thrill with food. With sandwiches, salads, cookies, and favorite luncheon dishes, Coca-Cola makes them all more delicious. When you have company for lunch, ice-cold Coca-Cola is especially welcome. Guests enjoy it, and it saves so much trouble in making preparations. For all you need to do to serve Coca-Cola is to get the bottles thoroughly chilled in your refrigerator. And that is made easy for you with the handy family carton that contains 6 bottles. Easy to buy, easy to carry, easy to serve, and so refreshing. Your dealer can supply you. All right, Don.
All right. We can supply you with Clark Dennis. Our freshman club, Romeo, who is on hand here and very much on foot, everybody's feet, including my own, but who's now standing on his own, which are clothed in the customary carpet slippers. We can't seem to break him of that habit. Clark is, as you know, trying out for the Shakespeare part in his neighborhood, and Clark's been complaining to me here. He said they're trying out 2-3 other fellows now for the part. They claim that he looks too young. So I don't know what we can do about that. By the way, Clark, what's the matter with your upper lip, huh?
I'm raising a mustache, Don.
So you can look a little older, huh? I see.
Don't you think my mustache is becoming?
Well, maybe coming, but it hasn't arrived yet. You came to my rescue, Clark Dennis.
The greatest thing, the sweetest thing that happened to me, you happen to be my ideal. And as I recall, you seem to fall from out of the blue, just when I needed you, I needed only you. Came to my rescue. I was low, I was frantic. You came to my rescue. It was oh so romantic. I saw you and adored you, and I began to live. Something to reward you. My heart is all I can give. You found me in danger of a life ever dreary. You found me a stranger, alone, alone. Some angel had to save me. I prayed to stars above, and you came to my rescue.
Memory time on the Refreshment Club. Let's refresh our memories with Flow Gently, Sweet Afton. Remember the old proverb, a soft answer turneth away wrath. Well, how many times we say something in the heat of a moment's anger, an argument, that we regret later on. I think the hardest thing in the world is to stay really angry at a person, someone you know well. After all, there's so much good that you know about everyone. Two sides to every question. So why go to the bother of being on the outs with someone? It's too much trouble. After all, remember, two enemies are merely potential friends who just don't know each other. Jane, what can we expect from you today?
Well, I imagine I could sing a song.
Well, I know, but what song?
I could ask you if it's true what they say about Dixie.
True what they say about Dixie. Well, I don't know. I wouldn't be the fellow who'd know about that. We have someone here who's going to lead that small swing combination behind you who's quite a mathematical wizard, you know. Eddie Ballantyne.
That's right.
He's the guy who'd know about that. Really, he's a mathematical wizard. Even when a mere boy, he was considered a problem child, you know, and he's got the answers to many, many things. I wonder if he knows that it's true what they say about Manna. That's the other trumpet player.
A little gore. Huh?
The Italian trumpet player there. Manna has an uncle, you know, in Rome, Italy. They say, I don't know whether it's true or not, they say that Manna's uncle over there in Rome is sending him some prize hogs, so Manna's learning how to speak pig Latin. Do you think that's true, Eddie?
No!
I don't know. Just take this one. Is it true what they say about Dixie? That'll do.
Is it true what they say about Dixie? Does the sun really shine all the time? Do the sweet magnolias blossom round everybody's door? Do the folks keep eating possum till they can't eat no more? Is it true what they say about Swanee? Is a dream but a dream so sublime? Do they laugh, do they love like they say in every song? Well, if it's true, that's where I belong. Is a dream, but that dream so sublime? And do they laugh, do they love like they say in every song? Well, if it's true, that's where I belong.
And now, my friends, we bring you once again a man of vast wisdom and knowledge. Man who has attended all the universities, gleaning this great knowledge which he brings you at no cost whatsoever. A man who will answer the perplexing, will answer the problems of the heart, home, and garage, the people's church. I take great pleasure in introducing the voice of inexperience, Elmer.
Ah, oh, that's the sweetest piece of music that was ever writ.
Okay, Elmer. Elmer, here's a letter first from Millie Street. She says, quote. I'm sorry. She says, after keeping steady company for 4 years, my boyfriend gave me a watch. Do you believe this means anything?
Not necessarily. But if he gives you another, I'll say that he was two-timing you.
Whoa. All right, Elmer, here's another letter from Mrs. Gabby DeBate, who says, quote. Thank you. My husband, who is in Paris, cabled me on his birthday and asked me if I wanted a Rembrandt or a Titian for my birthday. Which should I take?
Dear Mademoiselle DeBate, indeed you are very, very lucky to have a birthday. Your handwriting analysis tells me you choose the right guy for a husband. You want to know whether you should accept a Rembrandt or a Titian? My answer is, most of them French cars are very good, and you can't go wrong.
Thank you, Albert. Thank you very much. You, too, may have your... Well, you know what I mean. Elmer will do it. With the eye swing, Walter. So the Refreshment Club must adjourn for today. Be with us again tomorrow to hear Helen Jane Belke, Clark Dennis, Walter Blaufuss and the orchestra, the cadet, and yours truly, Don McNeil. Meanwhile, remember, whoever you are, whatever you do, wherever you may be, when you think of refreshment, think of Coca-Cola, for Coca-Cola makes any pause the pause that refreshes. And ice-cold Coca-Cola is everywhere.
That does it for this hour of Old Time Radio. I'm Jake Longwell. This has been program number 1615 in the Upstate Radio Theater series, distributed by Quality Radio Productions.